And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I apologise for having a low-tech presentation and for the absence of PowerPoint. I'll do my best to make up for the absence of colourful and engaging slides. Well, I'm conscious that this session is dedicated to discussing the remaining gaps and challenges in relation to separated children seeking asylum in Ireland. And while I took it that my marching orders were therefore to be constructively critical, it's easier to take on that role against a background of very positive momentum and change for this group of young people. And I would echo what was said earlier on, that the situation has evolved on nearly every single front for this group of young people over the last number of years, and that change has been for the better. What I'm going to do is, in my presentation, is look firstly at where the requirement for effective monitoring sits with Ireland's international legal obligations, particularly under the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. And monitoring is an issue that is touched on in the Safe and Sound document, which was presented earlier on, but I think it's worth some further exploration. After looking at that, I'll then discuss some of the main aspects of compliance in the Irish context, with specific reference to the role of the Ombudsman for Children. Before I proceed with all of that, though, I will briefly set out what the general role and functions of the Ombudsman for Children's Office are, because Ombudsman offices come in different shapes and sizes, and I don't presume everyone's familiar with the one that I work in. The Ombudsman for Children's Office was established 10 years ago under the Ombudsman for Children Act, and although we don't currently have an Ombudsman for Children, the next one will be appointed by the President of Ireland, will be accountable to the Oireachtas, and will be entirely independent of government in the performance of his or her functions. And those three principal functions that the Ombudsman for Children has is, first of all, the traditional and familiar complaints handling function of an Ombudsman. The second function is to provide advice to the government and to the Oireachtas on law and policy affecting children. And an example of this was the advice that our office gave to the government on the Immigration, Residence and Protection Bill, specifically from the perspective of compliance with our international children's rights obligations. And the third function that the office has is our participation and education function. And the office is obliged by statute to consult directly with children and young people on matters that affect them and to highlight those issues of concern with the relevant policymakers. And one of the most significant pieces of work that our office has undertaken under this function was a project with separated children seeking asylum in 2009. And the aim of that project was to capture the views and experiences of these young people on the issues affecting them since their arrival in Ireland, to give them a platform to express those views and also to make any relevant policy recommendations. And although some of those issues, indeed many of them, are historical at this stage, there are still a number that have relevance and resonance today. Turning now to the issue of where oversight and monitoring sits within our international obligations, are looking particularly at the best interests principle, which is set out in Article 3 of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. The most familiar part of that provision is the first paragraph, which provides that in all actions concerning children, whether undertaken by public or private social welfare institutions, courts of law, administrative authorities or legislative bodies, the best interests of the child shall be a primary consideration. Now, in its general comment on what the scope of that provision is, the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child has clarified that one of the measures necessary for the realisation of rights protected by Article 3 is the establishment of mechanisms and procedures for complaints, for remedy and for redress, in order to ensure that the right of the child to have his or her best interests considered appropriately is integrated and consistently applied in all implementation measures. The other core domains that states' parties have and must address in order to comply with obligations under Article 3 include the incorporation of the best interests principle in legislation, in the coordination and implementation of policy, in the allocation of national resources, in terms of training for relevant professionals, and also for the collection of data. And I would say, of course, in providing adequate information to young people so that they can express their views on relevant matters in accordance with Article 12 of the Convention. Now, there is a lesser-known third and final paragraph of Article 3, which is something of a poor relation. It doesn't get much airtime, but it is relevant in the context of monitoring. And it provides that states' parties shall ensure that the institutions, services and facilities responsible for the care or protection of children shall conform to the standards established by competent authorities, particularly in the areas of safety, help in the number and suitability of their staff, as well as competent supervision. Now, in the examination of state party reports, the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child has been very clear that and identified the need for appropriate standard setting and indeed inspection as a natural extension of this principle. And in the committee's general comment on the treatment of unaccompanied and separated children outside their country of origin, Article 3.3 of the Convention is also identified as a provision underpinning the committee's discussion of procedural safeguards and support measures in relation to access to asylum procedures, and these safeguards are clearly echoed in the Safe and Sound guidance. It's unsurprising that the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child has linked the best interests principles so clearly with extensive redress, monitoring and oversight requirements. The reach of Article 3 is very long indeed. It extends beyond judicial decision-making to encompass the much broader hinterland of administrative bodies making decisions and indeed providing services to children. And the question prompted by this is, what conditions must obtain to ensure that the right of children to have their best interests considered as a primary consideration is effective in practice? Well, the answer is there are an awful lot of conditions that must obtain, many of which were mentioned earlier on in the context of the Safe and Sound guidance. But one of those conditions is that there must be an institutional and regulatory framework in place that facilitates and encourages decision makers to respect the best interest principle, as well as providing redress where there is a failure to do so. Although the existence of redress mechanisms is a central part of the requirements under Article 3 of the Convention, it's important to note that states' obligations go beyond the need to require or to put in place, rather, redress mechanisms. As I've already mentioned, there are clear requirements for standards to be put in place for relevant services and for a system of inspection to be put in place too. And although the work of inspectorates can include responding rapidly to serious concerns regarding rights violations, much of the focus of their work is preventive or corrective at a general level, which is not the same thing as providing an avenue of redress per se. Now, while I've emphasised the aspects of Article 3 of the Convention on the Rights of the Child relevant to monitoring and oversight, it is important to recall that the different aspects of this provision are interrelated. So when you have monitoring mechanisms, legislating, incorporating the best interest principle, policy as outlined by colleagues here in relation to what they're doing. Thanks very much. I have 5 minutes to go. I must be enjoying myself. Time is flying. And all of those things must hang together, and they all reinforce each other. Moving on then to the situation in Ireland and how this is borne out in practice and where we are in terms of compliance. And we'll look at a number of different facets which I've outlined there. And the first facet I'd like to raise is the collection of data, which has been mentioned by a number of speakers already today and indeed features very prominently in the EMN report. And the guidance from the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child is very clear on this point, that respect for the best interest principle requires an ongoing process of impact assessment and evaluation of different measures that support the rights and welfare of children. This necessitates, obviously, the gathering and evaluation of relevant information. Now, I'll hesitate to extol the virtues of good data collection at a conference co-hosted by the ESRI. It may appear like I'm carrying coals to Newcastle, but the point that bears repetition here is that good data collection is not just common sense or indeed a prerequisite for good and sound policy making. It is a matter of our international legal obligation. I think that point must be recalled. This is especially so in respect of a group of young people where significant and weighty rights are engaged. And the lack of relevant disaggregated data in relation to vulnerable groups, including separated children seeking asylum, is a constant source of concern to the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child. The committee raised the issue of data with Ireland the last time it was examined in 2006, and I fully expect the committee to do so again when we're next examined in January 2016. The next facet of compliance of Article 3 I want to raise is the incorporation of the best interests principle in legislation relevant to separated children seeking asylum. The EMN report quite rightly points out that the amendment to the Constitution relating to children's rights endorsed by the people in November 2012 incorporated the best interest principle, but in a circumscribed way. And specifically, the report notes that the requirement for legislation to give effect to the best interest principle does not extend to proceedings relating to asylum and immigration. I think that was a missed opportunity, and certainly our office urged very strongly for a fuller incorporation of the best interest principle in the constitutional amendment. And one of the reasons it would be useful, thank you, for doing that is that if you have that principle enshrined at a constitutional level, it would bind the Oireachtas when it then comes to legislate in various areas that affect children and require the incorporation of the best interest principle. And I certainly hope when the Immigration, Residence and Protection Bill comes before the House again that that will feature prominently in the discussions. And indeed, the House of the Oireachtas count many tenacious advocates for children's rights among their number, so I remain hopeful on that score. Before turning finally to the question of complaints handling by the Ombudsman for Children's Office, I think it's really important to mention the issue of inspection in the Irish context. At the time Ireland was last examined by the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child, we were back in days where the situation was more challenging, where in addition to having large numbers of children accommodated in hostels, they were also environments which were not subject to independent inspection by the Social Services Inspectorate. And it is one of the cardinal points of ensuring that you have a decent and robust framework there to prevent rights abuses occurring, that relevant services are subject to appropriate and independent inspection. And that's why it's very positive to see that that all services provided by TUSLA to separated children seeking asylum are subject to independent inspection now by our Health Information and Quality Authority. By contrast with the progress made in relation to closing the gap on the inspection of services for separated children seeking asylum, there remains an outstanding issue with respect to the investigatory remit of the Ombudsman for Children's Office. In general terms, our office is empowered to investigate complaints made by or on behalf of young people, including separated children, in relation to the administrative actions of public bodies. And this includes, for example, the Child and Family Agency, the HSE, schools and the Department of Education, and very often it will be a number of different public bodies that might be under examination, because of course young people are often in receipt of services from a number of different entities. And the outstanding issue in terms of our own remit in that domain is that there is an exclusion in the area of asylum and immigration, and I'll wrap up very shortly on this. And specifically, Section 11 of the Ombudsman for Children Act provides the Ombudsman for Children may not examine the actions of public bodies taken in the administration of the law relating to asylum, immigration, naturalisation or citizenship. Virtually every year since our office's establishment, we have called on the Oireachtas to modify this exclusion. But it's important to be clear about what we're looking for, because in seeking to change this, we have never sought, nor would we seek, to have any role in relation to determining a child's immigration or protection status. Where you have a specialised body to carry out such determinations, a statutory appeal mechanism and the possibility of judicial review, there is no role for an ombudsman that I can see in terms of adjudicating on that particular decision. However, the OCO believes in principle there's no reason why actions that do not relate specifically to making decisions on status should be exempt from scrutiny. If there was an instance, for example, of statutory bodies with responsibilities in this area not following their own policies regarding how young people should be treated during the determination process, or difficulties with respect to the provision of information and communication with young people, or indeed with respect to unusual or undue delays, the OCO believes that it should be examinable in the same way that it can examine other statutory bodies that provide services to these young people, including TUSLA. So closing this gap, I think, would bring us closer to a fuller harmonisation with our obligations under the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. A great deal of progress has been made, and it is true that the State will be able to report significant progress when it comes before the committee again. It is my hope that by the time that dialogue does take place in 2016, there will be even more progress to report on this front. Thank you very much indeed.